The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt podcast, bringing to you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Helping make it all possible is the generous partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy and ADF, the Alliance Defending Freedom. Here's another piece I'll trust you enjoy.
Just talking to you about Heather McDonald's speech at Colgate, I believe it was, and where she was shouted down. And lo and behold, I got Heather McDonald. Hi, Heather.
Hey, Dennis, how are you?
I'm pretty good. My country's in trouble, but I'm pretty good.
Yeah.
And
it gets worse and worse.
It seems that way. Why? You are as decent, mild-mannered, fact-based a human as I have ever had the privilege of meeting. Is that, I was going to say, why then do you attract screamers and haters? And then I realized maybe that's exactly why.
Absolutely. They've not experienced facts up to this point to contradict their favorite identity, which is victims, victimhood, oppression. These college students are surrounded by a group of codependent adults whose very livelihoods depend on brainwashing students into thinking of themselves as oppressed. So if they meet somebody who says, you're not oppressed by race, you're not oppressed by sex, you're not victims of a campus rape epidemic, you females have complete agency to decide whether you get involved in a drunken hookup or not, this challenges their, at this point, very reason for being, and they become a snarling mob.
Now, when I go to college campuses, Ben Shapiro goes, I know obviously my own audiences because I'm me, but I've seen Ben's on YouTube, and a lot of the students come there to support me or support him. Do you get support or mostly antagonism?
Well, what I've experienced recently is the protest mob deliberately tries to fill the entire auditorium to prevent anybody who is sympathetic. At Holy Cross, they filled it and then marched out. As I was talking about Renaissance humanism, nobody else was allowed back in to fill the empty seats, so they did a very good job of preventing other people from hearing me. I do get on the sort of margins and on the interstices a few students who come up and whisper, thank you so much, we're grateful for you to be here. But the protest efforts are pretty successful, and Colgate presented a really interesting twist. It was a most brilliant emblem of the closed-mindedness of students. The call to action to summon these protesters suggested that students show up, put headphones on, bring a book by their most favorite radical author, do homework, sit there not listening, be in the audience, but definitely do not listen to what I have to say. It's no surprise then their questions were completely off the wall and had nothing to do with anything I said during my speech.
Wow. So is that what happened? They sat there with headphones?
Yeah. They had headphones, you know, pretending not to listen. Now, I suspect they were actually listening. And some people didn't have the headphones on, but there definitely were some. Others stood up on the stage with a few very large banners that they very noisily unfurled, made out of paper, with Spanish slogans about, you know, we will overcome, and I don't know, I couldn't read them, that probably there's no people are illegal or something like that, the usual open borders tripe. But once the question and answer period began, the students were just a unified mob of resentment, contempt, derision, and their response to my view of, look at, people deserve due process. I'm going to make no presumptions about who is and who is not a survivor about campus rape until I know the facts. And if you were ever accused of a crime, you would hope for a neutral tribunal and the opportunity to provide facts yourself. This just provoked the most outraged.
This Colgate was yesterday?
Let's see. It was Thursday night.
Thursday night, Colgate University. So who invited you?
Well, ironically, something called the Open Discussion Club, which is a marvelous enterprise. But again, the sight of these, literally the monkeys, monkeys see, monkeys, you know, with their hands over their eyes, their hands plugging their ears, was an example of how desperately something like an Open Discussion Club is needed. This is a recent student-formed organization.
And how big was the hall?
It was large, and there were students in the sitting in the aisles. I was frankly surprised the fire marshals let them in because there was
How many people would you say? 500? What would you say?
Several hundred easily, absolutely.
Okay.
And it was
full. Now, was it filled with people who loathe you or mixed?
I would say the loathing quotient was probably 3/4, 4/5, maybe.
That's astonishing. And did they heckle?
Yeah, absolutely.
So so they either heckled or put on headphones.
Right. During the speech, they basically kept silent. It was during the question and answer.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Answer the questions that the heckle was prevalent.
Was it mixed male, female, more female, more male?
Oh, that's hard to say.
I guess it was mixed.
I do get the male questions. The left-wing males are just as committed to the idea that they are perpetrating a rape culture on college campuses as the females are. It's very curious, but I guess they're desperately trying to atone for their toxic masculinity by...
Well, they have no masculinity, so there's nothing for them to atone for.
Right.
They would atone for having no masculinity, in my opinion. That would be the way I would characterize them as a male. So I feel for you. It's very hard to get me down, but if I walked, I don't care if everybody in the room disagrees with me, but I do care if that's the only crowd that shows up at a campus.
Well, as I say, their goal was to prevent other people from coming in. So I don't know.
I see. So what are they? They got the tickets as quickly as possible?
Yeah, they showed up and tried to fill the hall. There was also protests out in the lobby. And then when I left, it's hilarious, there were little signs of faculty in solidarity signs, union workers in solidarity signs with empty plates of brie and cheese. So they were assuaging their agony at my presence there with some nice, tasty hors d'oeuvres, courtesy of the faculty and the staff.
What do you think you say that most aggravates them?
That they're not victims, that any college student today is the most privileged individual in history by virtue of his unfettered access to knowledge. But I can tell you, if you want to be depressed, Dennis, here's the two things that I hear invariably. One is the contempt for the idea of due process, and not assuming that somebody who claims to be a survivor is a survivor. The other thing that is the most upsetting is when I speak about the ideals of Martin Luther King and color blindness and how the diversity ideology on campus is a direct contradiction of that, the explosion of laughter and contempt if you mention color blindness in relationship to Martin Luther King is really troubling. And what I haven't asked these students yet is, okay, what's your alternative? You don't want color blindness. So if a white student says, I don't want to be taught by a black teacher, is that fine with you? The black students invariably claim they want black dorms, and of course the diversity bureaucracy is very happy to comply. What if white students said, we want a white dorm? What are your views on that? So these students are unable to think logically and to think about the further ramifications of the principles that they are embracing. But it is really a complete demonstration of the failure of American education that they are so indifferent to both our civil rights ideals and our basic due process ideals.
So between, this is not a rape culture, due process, you should be colorblind, you've really hit the trifecta.
Yeah, I guess I also did a, I quoted a utterly absurd passage by a trans femme who was wondering whether when his gay cisgendered friends use she and her with each other and use it with her or him or they rather, if they're respecting his gender sufficiently. And my point in reading this was just to say this sort of navel-gazing narcissism is an educational and intellectual dead end. You guys should be opening yourselves up to something far greater than your pathetic little pronoun tyranny. That's also asking for trouble. But this time that didn't happen. But next time it will, believe me.
We have exactly a minute left. Tell everybody about this young girl, Schneider, or whatever her name is, the composer, performer.
Alma Deutscher. I wrote about her in the current New Criterion. She's a 14-year-old British composer who adores beauty in music, and she is standing up single-handedly against the modernist composer establishment that believes in subjecting listeners to beauty. She sees herself in the line of Mozart, Haydn, Beethoven, and she is articulate and wants to share her love of music with an audience who is desperate for beauty and harmony and melody.
I looked her up as a result of your article, and I watched her play. She plays brilliantly violin and piano and composes. Alma Deutscher, God bless you, Heather McDonald, special American.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. Our program is coming today in partnership with the Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy. It's America's most unique graduate leadership programs offered on Pepperdine's breathtaking campus in Malibu, California. Learn more at publicpolicy.pepperdine.edu. If you're enjoying the podcast, please tell a friend to go to Town Hall Review and sign up as well today.
This is Albert Moeller for townhall.com. A story coming out of Connecticut reveals one of the most inevitable collisions on the current cultural landscape. The policymaking panel for interscholastic sports in Connecticut says a high school student must be able to compete according to the student's declared gender identity. The parents of three female track athletes are now suing in federal court, charging that allowing biological males to compete as females destroys the very idea of female athletic competition. The attorney with the Alliance Defending Freedom said, quote, forcing girls to be spectators in their own sports is completely at odds with Title IX, a federal law designed to create equal opportunities for women in education and athletics. Connecticut's policy violates that law and reverses nearly 50 years of advances for women, end quote. Well, that's an inevitable collision. The current policy is an attempt to try to posit moral autonomy, one's stated or claimed gender identity, over biological creational reality. It won't work. I'm Albert Moeller.
The Pepperdine Graduate School of Public Policy, impacting policy decisions today, preparing public leaders for tomorrow.